Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, March 18th. I'm Olivia Rose. Fire season marks the time of year when drier conditions spark a higher risk of fires. The standard start date for wildland fire season is normally April 1st, according to Alaska state statute. But for communities without much snow right now, it's already here. The state issued a public order earlier this month declaring an early start to fire season in parts of Alaska, including all of Southeast. Other affected areas include much of Southwest and South Central Alaska. Lily Coyle is with the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. She says dry or warmer weather conditions and low to no snowpack means there's a higher risk of wildland fires happening, so fire managers are starting the season a few weeks earlier than usual. She says this has never happened before.
This is the first time we've had to do an early fire season just because of how early the snow melted off in parts of Alaska.
Coyle says it's been a, quote, visibly early season. The dead grass and brush that's normally seen in May is already exposed. She says the public order felt warranted.
Wildland firefighters and the state and across Alaska, really, we've been getting ready all winter and all spring for fire season. It is here earlier than we're used to seeing it. There's already been a couple responses in the Mat-Su and Kenai areas, but we do just really need the public's help and support right now in doing everything they can to be careful, be cautious, and prevent human-caused fires.
The season officially started yesterday, and with it comes burn permit requirements. Coyle says burn permits are an educational tool for preventing fires and protecting Alaskans. People with burn permits call the state's hotline to check on the fire risk level for their area and learn if it's an okay day to burn or not. Burn permits are free and available from the state or through some municipalities. In Petersburg, residents can apply for a permit on the local borough website, but residents outside of Service Area 1 will need to file with the state.
You don't need to return them to anybody, but you need to have it signed and dated, just acknowledging that you contacted that hotline number and that you are following those guidelines.
Coyle says the state can issue warnings and citations for noncompliance. For some communities, there are alternatives available for when burning isn't an option, like dropping off woody debris at a local disposal site. Petersburg's Baylor charges a few cents per pound for wood waste. Burn permits are required in Alaska until August 31st. You can download them online from forestry.alaska.gov/burn. A Japanese theatrical musical performance group is touring Alaska and kicked off the first show in Wrangell on Saturday. Unit Suzel is from Portland, Oregon. KSTK's Colette Zarnicki attended the event and brings us this report.
I am from Iwakuni City, Yamaguchi Prefecture, Japan.
That is Toru Watanabe opening up for Unit Suzel's performance called Constant State of Otherness. But before Unit Suzel performed, the Wrangell Cooperative Association greeted them on stage with their tribal songs and dances. Michelle Fuji is one of Unit Suzel's co-directors, along with her partner Toru Watanabe. The group performs Japanese folk dance and taiko, or Japanese drums. They also weave in film.
DJ.
Yamami.
Yeah.
Fuji says Suzel can be described in three ways: creation, imagination, and being noisy.
We combine these three words in the aspiration to be creative, to be imaginative with the drum, and hope that we are heard throughout our communities.
She says their performance, Constant State of Otherness, went through a deep creative process.
We started with our own personal stories. It was a multi-year process. We also worked with a lot of different high school students throughout five different cities. So even in the show, you'll hear woven quotes of the high school students speaking about themselves.
Dad? Are you worried?
Fuji says self-identity plays a really big part in the storytelling of the performance, which can be seen and heard throughout.
I am from the stolen lands of the Native Hawaiians.
She She says, although the original question that developed the performance was, who am I? It's also not just about themselves when it comes to identity.
So much of who we are is based on our upbringing, our ancestors, our traditions, our all these things, these rituals that exist in our lives because it was from generations and generations of practice.
She says Unit Suzel primarily stays closer to home in Portland. They do a lot of regional projects, like working with inmates at Oregon State Penitentiary.
This is sunsetting our touring right now because we just sort of go where the project is flowing. The most upcoming projects for us will be very much close to home.
Sylvia Edifa helps organize the annual Bearfest Festival in Wrangell. She says she found out about Unit Suzel through the Alaska State Council on the Arts and helped bring them to town.
I look for opportunities that we can actually make and something that's different, that has a big impact, something that is special. And when I find that opportunity, we jump on it.
She says bringing Unit Suzel to Wrangell is a way to raise money for Bearfest, which happens in late July. She brought the performing arts group to Wrangell with a combination of grants and money raised by Bearfest in previous years. Edifa says she always tries to make sure the performers she brings in visits Wrangell's schools as part of an educational outreach component.
I think that they did a great job at the school, at the elementary school. The program was just a little different than it was at the high school, and it was appropriate for both schools. And this was different than both of those. And I think for these times and the way it was presented, it was very appropriate.
Unit Suzel is the fourth event Bearfest has brought in to support the festival itself. The other three included a melodica performance, a jazz manouche band, and a comedian. Before heading home to Portland, Unit Suzel is scheduled to perform 5 other shows throughout Alaska, including Petersburg and ending in Bethel. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Czarnicki.
Unit Suzel will perform in Petersburg tonight at 7 in the Sons of Norway Hall. Tickets to the performance are sold out. Employees fired last month from the agency that oversees federal fisheries in Alaska were reinstated Monday morning. That's in response to a federal judge's ruling that the Trump administration's mass layoffs of thousands of workers was unlawful. The Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports that while Alaska fisheries employees may have been reinstated, that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be returning to work.
In Alaska, the agencies that were hit by the Trump administration's layoffs include the National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. But 2 separate rulings came down Thursday that called the across-the-board firings unlawful. In one of them, a U.S. district judge in Maryland ordered 18 departments to reinstate the fired employees. The Department of Commerce, which oversees NOAA, complied, but it placed those employees in a paid non-duty status. Rebecca Howard is one of 13 employees at NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center who were fired last month. She received an email Monday morning saying that she had been reinstated, but she says that doesn't quite mean she's going back to work.
They have basically placed us in like a paid status, but we're not returning to work necessarily. And so no one's really sure exactly what's going on.
Howard says the process has been confusing. Even her supervisor wasn't aware of the details.
To be honest, my supervisor wasn't informed. I had to inform her, as was the case for everybody kind of up the chain at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. I don't think that anyone was told when these would be coming out.
The government has strict protocols for federal layoffs due to things like budget cuts or agency restructuring. Employees let go under these circumstances receive certain protections like priority consideration for reemployment, severance pay, or retirement benefits. But last month's mass terminations cited poor performance, stripping those employees' protections. Howard says the agency made it clear their reinstatement could be temporary if the department successfully overturns the judge's ruling.
It's kind of harsh, honestly, because it basically tells us that they may retroactively fire us later if they win in this court case.
The temporary order expires at the end of the month, and a hearing is scheduled March 26th. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
KFSK has an open airways policy. We encourage the public to express opinions, ideas, and creative works. These pieces are available on our website, kfsk.org, following the scheduled radio broadcast. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. This is part of a series celebrating Women's History Month. The following was submitted for broadcast by Midori Hind and Laura Lombard.
My name is Midori, and the person I'm going to be talking with is Laura. We want to talk about Elizabeth Baradovich because she's a famous woman who was born in Petersburg. She did so much for Alaska Natives. Elizabeth was born in Petersburg on 4th of July, 1911. She was adopted soon after her birth and moved with her adopted parents to Sitka. When it was time for her to go to school, she found out Alaska Natives were punished when they spoke Tlingit in schools.
As she grew older, she was troubled to see that Alaska Natives and other minorities were separated in many ways from white people. Schools, hospitals, movie theaters, and even cemeteries had different places for people who were Alaska Native and people who weren't, and the nicest places were only for the white people. Many businesses would not even serve Alaska Natives. On December 15, 1931, Elizabeth married Roy Paradovich. Together, they worked to promote equality through their work of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and the Alaska Native Brotherhood. Elizabeth and Roy raised three children, Kwok, then moved to Juneau in 1941.
In Juneau, Elizabeth again experienced discrimination. They had trouble finding a place what would rent to Natives. Their children were forced to attend government schools for non-white children. She went to the superintendent and convinced him that her children needed to attend public school because it was within a walking distance from their home. Soon, her son, Roy Jr., was the first Alaskan Native to attend public school in Juneau. In 1943, anti-discrimination bill failed to pass in Alaska. Just later, Elizabeth spent the next 2 years flying around to Southeast Alaska to impromptu the bill. When the bill came up again in 1945, Elizabeth delivered the famous speech to the Alaskan legislature.
During the debate, some senators made racist remarks about Alaska Natives and spoke against passage of the bill. After testimony was over, the Senate president asked if anyone else would like to speak. She thought of everything that the Alaska Natives have experienced.
Elizabeth searched for the right words. She stood up dressed in white velvet gloves matching her hat in a green dress. And she said, "I would have not expected that I have whom barely out of slavery would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of record civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights." She spoke loudly and clearly about discrimination that Alaska Natives faced.
Her powerful speech changed the hearts of enough senators that the Anti-Discrimination Act passed 11-5. When the governor signed the bill, he handed Elizabeth the pen with which the bill was signed and said, "This is the most important piece of legislation passed in Alaska and will help the most in its development. It never would have passed without your speech." Elizabeth Baradovich was a brave Tlingit woman who changed Alaska forever with her personal courage and commitment. It was a big deal that she stood up for people of color, but it was also very important because she was a woman.
This story is from Fighter in Velvet Gloves and is available at the library.
That commentary was submitted by Midori Hind and Laura Lombard. The KFSK Airwaves policy is available on the KFSK website, kfsk.org. For more information, please call General Manager Tom Abbott at 907-772-3808. For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.